talk about cars. Ferrari, GTO, Bentley, CRX, and even down to your great-granddad's Peerless. Welcome to No Driving Gloves, the car talk authority, where experience, knowledge, and controversy share the same seat. Enjoy the ride. Now your hosts, John and Derek.
It's Thursday night. I guess the song in Motley Crue is Friday night, but it's Thursday night. I got
the mood
mic.
Is right.
Yeah, I got a mic and the mood is right. We're here. We're talking cars, car stuff, automotive related things.
Except for driving gloves. There's none of that allowed here.
I was just listening to a podcast where they were actually discussing that recently and how pretentious you are if you're actually driving with driving gloves.
See, and that's why we over here at No Driving Gloves don't wear them. We're not pretentious. We are common car folk. And that's what the No Driving Gloves community is for. Common car folk that enjoys discussing automotive topics and sometimes disagree. Because
why would you disagree with us? We're right.
Well, no, because John's always wrong.
No, I believe John's always right. Sorry,
there are two sides to every coin.
There we go. Just making sure we had audio coming through.
Echo all of a sudden.
Really delayed echo. Those were profound statements we were making about how John's always right. Did you hear the profoundness in our statements?
I heard the crickets that were on last week.
You mean my dog?
Yeah.
I got her a really cool
name for a dog, wouldn't it? Cricket. Cricket,
I got her a little jeweled pink collar for the new house with a new engraved name tag for her that holds her Apple Air tag so that she can never be lost.
Very fancy.
Hey, only the best. But that's not too automotive related. We don't have dog power, do we? We have horsepower.
Still animals, right?
What's one dog power?
I'm not sure. Somebody's probably calculated that.
Probably.
But I would say some automotive names are great for pets. My cat's name is actually Otto, O-T-T-O, after Nicholas Otto. So, just saying, Winton is a classic name for a...
Sounds like a cat.
No, that'd be like a very, very, what's an intellectual looking dog? What would be a good one for that? Not up on my dog breeds well enough, but I'm envisioning something like a proper English bulldog or something. Just be like, Winton, come here.
I had a friend that had a Cooper and... I really want to say it was a John and a Cooper.
Oh, nice, John Cooper. Actually, Alexander Winton was a Scottish immigrant. So it'd have to be something like a Scottish Terrier or something that you'd name Winton. Jump in on the show comments, whether you're watching live or listening later, jump on No Driving Gloves social media. Let us know what you guys think are great pet names that come from the automotive world.
Well, I was going to just ask how many of us out there jump for joy. How many of us have bought Tesla stock in the last few days hoping for a rebound?
I bet you John has.
No, I did get out my electric vehicle this evening and played with it for about an hour.
Very nice. Mowing the lawn.
You got both the front and back hedges all trimmed up.
Nice. That new electric trimmer to take care of all that.
Which brings us to the point of our new sponsor, Manscaped. For when you need to mow your lawn, both in the front and the back.
Well, that turned quick. Anyway.
Well, I really would tell Manscaped, if I could even use some of the copy from years ago, I'd let them be a sponsor for free.
So we all know that John really likes Manscaped products. All right.
Honestly, their nose trimmers are horrible. I've went through three of them. They just stop.
Great, great way to get a sponsorship.
Hey, I'm being honest about the product. But the Lawnmower 3, the Lawnmower 4, and now they have the new Lawnmower 5. And they've also got some sort of new hedge thing that I'm really interested in picking up.
All right. As the old tune went, on with the show, let's begin.
Exit stage right. Or is that...
Stage left, stage right, whatever. Who cares? It's one of the sides.
So do we jump right into a topic? Probably, because that's what people can't join us here for. We've already wasted 7 minutes of their lives trying to get to this topic.
Wasted. Yes. And I think this is a fitting topic, and it's a good one to jump right into because spring is here. Spring has sprung. Everybody I know is prepping their cars for the driving season. Didn't you get
the old 490 up and running this week?
I did, John. I got the 490 fired back up, and it's going to be out for a putter around the block this weekend, I am sure. So,
I just thought getting the cars ready for spring.
Yep. Going to be working on the Falcon this weekend, hopefully getting the brakes rebuilt and getting it up and running as well. And might get on the other cars too.
It's weird. I have heard Falcons brought up on multiple podcasts this week. Something about Leno and loving he's got a 62 or 63 Falcon and absolutely loves it. And that would be one of two of the collector cars he would keep if he had to get rid of everything. Who's the other person talking about their Falcon? Oh, Randy Nurnberger, a guy who founded Bring a Trailer Bat. He was on Spike Ferrison's podcast this week talking about his Falcon. And that was it. He would keep his Falcon, and I can't remember his other collector car. Those would be the two that he would keep. And then there was something about Leno, and I can't remember exactly what it was, because I thought Leno was on a former guest of ours podcast. Why can't I think his name?
What is his podcast? That might help, because some of us don't know what you're talking about.
Collecting cars or
collector car, the collector car podcast.
Yes. The collector car podcast.
I'm going to blank on his name too. That's terrible. See him at every show too. And I know his name when I see his face, but right now I cannot recall his name. That's terrible. I'll have to apologize to him next time I see him.
It'll pop into my head. I just think of so many.
And John, the reason for that is because Falcons are just amazing little cars. They are fantastic. They are almost bulletproof, and they're just a hoot to drive.
I won't discount you on all of that, because if I remember correctly, the Falcon was rebodied a few years later into everybody's favorite collector car.
Wasn't that done in 1964 and a half, John?
I believe that was done in 1964 and a half. which
I believe the name we're looking for is Greg Stanley, by the way.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Greg, Google.
Our apologies.
Which, while we're talking about that rebodied Falcon, a memory popped up on my Facebook this week. And I don't know, did you get the same memory? Because you should have. You should have had something similar.
Was it this week that the memory from Barber came up?
Yep.
It was recently. I knew that, but days and time and weeks and things run together for me anymore. So that was a lucky guess.
Little did you know that 15 years ago that your life would dwindle down to wasting Thursday evenings with me.
Exactly.
And hundreds of our closest friends.
Yes.
Let's jump into this topic.
We already tried once.
I'm a meanderer. I'm the wanderer. One of these days we'll do a show about music and cars, except we can't play music on podcasts. You just listen to my renditions. Drove my Chevy down to the levee.
So, John,
what'd Michigan do this week, Derek?
Cool news out of my home state of Michigan. This is actually pretty cool, in my opinion. I hope everyone feels this way. But growing up in Michigan and owning old cars, of course, when you go to register them and get your plates and get everything taken care of for the vehicles, if they are over 25 years old, you have a decision to make, and that is whether you're going to plate the vehicle as a historic vehicle, or are you going to plate it as just a standard automobile with a normal state plate. And I think I actually have mentioned this on the podcast in the past, probably very early episodes. My dad and I always typically just plated the cars with a standard year-to-year plate. Because in Michigan, the certain police departments and levels of law enforcement can be jerks about this. But originally, the section on historic vehicle registration read that a vehicle with a historic vehicle plate on it that is over 25 years old and is owned solely as a collector's item and for participation in club activities, exhibition tours, parades, and similar uses, including mechanical testing, but cannot be used for general transportation. In other words, if you were to get pulled over by one of the wonderful law enforcement agencies in the great state of Michigan, you would have to in some way prove that you were either headed to or coming back from a club activity, some type of exhibition, car show, etc., some automotive classic car tour that you'd been on, a parade, or something of similar use, or that you were doing some type of mechanical testing, shakedown, drive of the vehicle. But you could not just be out driving around. And as I said a minute ago, some law enforcement agencies in Michigan were very, very hard on this. Well, thank you to the legislators of the state of Michigan. They have added to this law just within the last month or so. And they added one sentence at the very end that now reads, "For purposes of this section, use of the vehicle during the period from Memorial Day weekend through Labor Day each year is considered an exhibition." In other words, the state of Michigan, a historic vehicle plated car can now drive freely from Memorial Day weekend through Labor Day weekend with essentially no real restrictions on the plate, because thankfully someone in Michigan or a host of members have realized that driving your historic vehicle during those spring, summer, and fall months is exhibiting it so that people can see it and enjoy it, and you as the owner can enjoy driving it. So hats off to Michigan in this case, that they are easing the restriction on driving historic vehicles when so many lawmakers in this country are trying to get rid of our historic vehicles. Thank you, Michigan.
But isn't this just going to turn the world upside down and create traffic jams and polluting and smog and thousands of itty bitty babies and flies dying because of lack of safety regulations? Isn't this a horrible thing? I mean, we need this tightened government restriction on our classic cars.
So here in the great state of Kentucky, the law reads specifically, classic cars in Kentucky can only be used for exhibition and shows, parades, tours, and other special uses, but not for general transportation. And that's where it ends.
I believe that's the way it is here in Alabama, too.
Yeah.
Because Alabamians really want to limit the use of our vehicles. Which I always
I get that there's like 4 or 5 months of pretty heavy winter in Michigan, and there isn't here in Kentucky. But Michigan's not that bad a place to live. And now I can drive my antique car whenever I want between Memorial Day and Labor Day. They're really trying to get me to come back, John. I think that's what it is.
Well, between Memorial Day and Labor Day is really not a bad time to be in Michigan. It's between Labor Day and Memorial Day that it really sucks.
Yeah, exactly. I need to be the 41-year-old blue hair, you know, just back to Michigan for the summer, then to the south for the winter. I can figure that out, can't I?
Yeah. It's a snowbird, except you're just wintering in Kentucky.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, just quickly pulled up the Alabama. The vehicle is operated in club activities, exhibitions, tours, parades, and can also be driven to these locations for purpose of attending these events or activities. If I remember correctly, though, once you put a historic tag on a car in Alabama, it's virtually a vintage tag. It's virtually impossible ever register it as a normal vehicle. October 1 shall be considered as the beginning of a new model year for vehicles registered as vintage vehicles. For example, on October 1st, 1996, a 1967 model year vehicle will qualify.
There you go. So Are you trying to conspiracy theory this, John? Is this the thread you're going down here, that Michigan is doing this to encourage all historic vehicle owners to switch to historic plates? And then in 5 years, they're going to change the law again where you can't drive historic vehicles, and any historic vehicle that's already been plated cannot be changed back to a normal plate. Are we taking the conspiracy theory string here?
You really should never say anything like that out loud, especially in a medium that will exist forever on the internet.
Someone somewhere is going to listen one day and go, "Dang, he's got a good idea." All right, let's take that.
sorry, California.
Yeah, actually, I just created the next law passed in California.
No, I'm not taking the conspiracy theory that way. I see tremendous good in this change. And part of me wants to say, I hope all the other states would follow through with it. Now, of course, in Florida, they should just make it, you know, from January 1st to December 31st. Just party and celebrate and use your vehicles like that year round in some, you know, some areas. Where I said to you at the beginning of the show, and my hesitation, this opens the floodgates for our day laborers, per se, or people that want to skirt the law a little bit and they can now register their vehicles for $25 or $35 a year or forever, flat rate forever. And now all of a sudden, we're in 2024 and say, I've got a 92 Chevrolet 1500 pickup that, the bedsides are pretty rotted and hinges are worn out on, and the thing pollutes, and three of the two taillights are burnt out, and the headlights put on with a bungee cord and duct tape. But I can put a historic tag on it, and now I'm exempt from inspections, I'm exempt from emissions, I'm exempt from anything, and I can drive this car around for, I don't know, I can't remember what the rate was, but $30-$35, and I never have to worry about plating or insuring or plating. I believe insurance is still there, but paying taxes on maintaining this vehicle, I can drive this rolling safety hazard all I want. And that's the problem I see and is going to happen, because I saw that take place in Virginia, which pretty much had an open use policy on your antique vehicles. And we had a lot of issues with people driving older cars for the reason of not having to pay any sort of ad valorem tax or anything on it. And I see this opening the floodgates to possibly creating abuse.
Well, I mean, that's with any law, isn't it, John? That there's going to be the good people that follow the law and do what they're supposed to do. And there's going to be the people who are shysters and do use it to their advantage, right? They're going to take the system and use it to their advantage. And it's unfortunate because it gives the antique vehicle community, at least in the registration and plate aspect, it when people see that, they're like, yeah, they're just skirting around the taxes and the laws. And the good thing about Michigan is they don't have any inspections or emissions or anything like that. So, I mean, everybody drives beaters up there anyway that don't have exhaust, catalytic converters and things like that. They've fallen off from the salt from the winters, after 3 years of driving them. But, I think that's, I mean, you I what I'm saying, can you can make that case with anything that, a law that is passed, people are going to look for the loopholes. They're going to look for the advantage that they can take of that. And not everybody, but the people who think that way. But I think for the majority and those of us that enjoy driving our cars, this opens up a window that's much better. I mean, drive around here, and I'm driving around Kentucky, I drive around Tennessee, I drive around Ohio and Michigan and go through Indiana frequently. I see it all the time. It doesn't matter how strict the state is. The people working at the clerk's office, the DMV, whatever you call it in your state, they have no clue, most of them, what these vehicles are when you go in and tell them, I have, X year, whatever vehicle. So to most folks working the counter, when you walk in and say, I've got a 1997, Chevrolet 1500 Sierra, I want to put his historic vehicle. They don't know. They know it's a pickup truck, right? They're not going to be like, is it some, they can't really ask you like, is it some beater? Is it, So it again is that the people advantage of the situation that is available to them. And those people need to stop. It's not right. But I also don't want to see it go away because those people are doing that.
See, I would have liked a little bit of proactive restriction on this. We already were restricting, and now they've added the one sentence that allows you to utilize the vehicle between Labor Day or Memorial Day and Labor Day. But it should have been, with you may utilize the vehicle between Memorial Day and Labor Day, provided it adheres to all safety and emission policies of the year of manufacture. Ooh. You know, just a little bit of restriction so that the guy driving around in something that is, I mean, is unsafe. And that's always my concern is, oh, big, he's driving around in a rusted out, you know, Lumina. It doesn't affect me. Well, it affects me. Strut tower collapses and the car then, you know, makes an abrupt lane change to the left, crosses and hits me head on. It affects me then. The odds of it happening are slim, but they're not none. The odds are always slim. And that's always my concern with things like this. The law is great. And I would, if we want to do it in every state, so be it. But we, again, it's careful what you wish for. You know, people wish for a little bit of restriction. And then say that little bit of restriction becomes more and more restriction. Here, we've loosened the restriction, and that's what we wished for. But be careful what you wish for, because by loosening it, did we loosen it too much? And now is the bad guy going to fall out of his noose and ride away on the horse?
Well, okay, let's... You said it's a good law, and it is. It's a very good change to this law. However, I think all of the states that I am familiar with have a major flaw within the historic vehicle law. And I don't know where it came from. Yeah, I'm getting all Schoolhouse Rock, right? There's a flaw in the law. Got to make things rhyme. But you know, it'd be interesting to research it, and I didn't step search for this show because I guess I hadn't thought about it until we started yapping, you know, talking to each other in the pre-show. But that would help do away with the beaters being driven under a historic plate is now that we are 135 to 140 years into production of the automobile, and really, you know, for sale to the public about 135 years, is 25 years really what should designate the limit of a historic vehicle? Back when these laws were written, obviously 25 years was quite an antiquated vehicle at the time. Today, things are a bit different. So I think my only recommendation or thought is, do we need to go back and consider how old a vehicle needs to be to have historic vehicle plates? What truly makes it a historic vehicle? Because in my opinion, it's not 25 years anymore. At one point it was.
Well,
I don't think it is.
The Alabama law that I cited, the initial law that was written, and I've got section 40-12-290 through section 40-12-297, Code of Alabama 1975. So when this was written, a 25-year-old car was 1950 or older. And as you said, say the car was invented in 1886, or we'll go 1885 for round numbers.
It was patented in 1886. It was invented long before that.
But you're dealing with potentially 65 model years of cars. Now we're dealing with 115. We've almost doubled
the number
of years that the cars are eligible, and quadrupled or the number of cars that are could be eligible under this, you know, with say there was no attrition. And we I with you, and I'm sure the AACA would love to work with you, and so would the CCA and everybody else. They would love to work with you and make this 25-year thing go away. And at this point, I mean, I drove by car lots today on, you know, around Birmingham, that 25-year-old cars are on sale at new car dealerships as used cars. It's not that the car, you know, Hondas and Toyotas last that long, no problem. I considered 97 Lexus a few weeks ago, and I really, really, really should have. And a 97 Lexus SC400 is as capable as any car I can go into the Honda or Toyota dealership and buy today, if it, you know, well kept and cared for. So I totally agree with you. It would not hurt me to see this expand to 35 or 40, possibly even 50 years old before you're classified or eligible to be registered this way. And we've had emission laws in place since 1976, 77, and this stuff started to take effect even in, as, you know, as far back as 74. And one of the reasons we came up with these historic tags or vintage plates or whatever we want to call them was to kind of allow an exemption from smog and emissions on these vehicles. You didn't have to update them. Now, 25 years old just means you can only get a 3-year, 36-month loan on it. You know, it's not, you know, it's not that old of a car. And half my month spent in Walmart parking lots and started to photograph cars and that, trying to get up a catalog to make our Instagram more active of the number of vehicles that are daily driven that are that age or older. I was in a, today there was a, you know, 2001 Cavalier. I was in a lot the other day. I stopped and I really should have taken a picture. Thought it was an Isuzu Amigo with a hard top on, and I got up to it. It was a pristine Geo Tracker, wow. with a hard top on it. Now, ironically, there's a Geo Tracker on Facebook Marketplace here in Birmingham, totally restored with a small block Chevy in it, and $17,500 or something. It's a really good looking truck.
You need that. You need that, John.
There's part of me that does need that.
But I really think that that, you know, might be the bigger question in these historic vehicles. You know, number one, hope that other states follow suit with Michigan. Pardon me, I swallowed wrong. Let's hope that other states follow suit with Michigan and we start driving our vehicles, you know, more regularly without question, because it really truly is exhibition of the vehicle when you take it out and drive it in the general public. Because you can't tell me any of our listeners or any of, you know, any of us that have antique or classic cars, if we take that car to a restaurant for dinner, to the parts store to pick up parts, or, you know, grocery store to grab something small and get groceries, and, you know, a antique car that's big enough to get your grocery. You are always, almost always run into one or more people that want to talk about the car, learn about it, hear your story and all that. And that's what exhibiting that vehicle is. It's about talking about it, sharing the story, sharing the history and sharing the passion. So great, again, great step by Michigan to understand that driving the vehicle and taking it places, even if it's not an organized event, is exhibiting it.
Well, but, Go ahead.
No, jump in.
I'll say it's exactly what you're saying is if I hop into my 69 Chevelle SS, perfectly restored, have my vintage tags on it, and I go to insert name of your favorite steakhouse here with valet parking, it's going to get parked right up front with the Ferraris and the Lamborghinis and the Rolls Royces because it's unique and it stands out. And you're, it, the restaurant is going to exhibit it to try to attract clientele. That's why they put the fancy exotics out front all the time. But when you show up in something vintage, I mean, if you think back to the show Suits, there's a Harvey at his New York classic car membership club, and he's trying to drive a Tesla, but he takes the Shelby. It's the same thing. You drive a 67 Shelby to one of these places, it's going to get parked out front, you know, along with a Ferrari, what is it, P8 or F8. I'm not even sure what the Ferrari numbering system is anymore. That's so far gone. But it is an exhibit. I'm going to let you do your butt, but I also then have a question on a counterpoint.
Well, what I was going to say is just what we've already been talking about. But I don't think the 25-year date, you know, restriction, whatever you want to call it, is the right restriction. I think it needs to be much longer. For one, I would probably be closer to 50 years. Think about it. We're in 2024. 50 years ago was 1974.
Yeah, your GTO would still fall in, so you're safe.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's not a bias there, but, well, no, it's not. I mean, it's just, that is a historic vehicle. I mean, yep. Something that is visually and technically, I hate to use the word antiquated, but it visually, technically, is significantly different from what is in production today. And you can't say that anymore about a 25-year-old car.
I was just talking to somebody about this the other day, that if you bought a Tesla Model S now, and you bought a Tesla Model S when they first came out, that was 13 years ago, model year-wise, and it hasn't changed at all. So, I mean, it's over half the lifespan of that 25. Nothing about the vehicle has changed. Be interesting when you guy rolls in a Tesla Model S to AACA thing.
Well, but I mean, that's nothing new, though, because the Model T didn't change it 18 years. So,
well, this article, the article we're referring to, or we noticed this on before digging, was from our favorite media company that also insures classic cars. How is this law going to affect the insurance industry? Because now the state says you can drive this car wherever the hell you want between Labor Day or Memorial Day and Labor Day. So I can drive it to work. I can drive it to the grocery store. I can drive it to pick the kids up. I can drive it to the movies. But my collector car insurance policy doesn't say that.
Ah, see, it benefits them. I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't find out our favorite media company that also insures cars and ensures that there is a lifestyle for these antique cars probably also has some lobbying power in the state of Michigan, because as you were saying that, I realized what immediately will happen is that you will have a new option on your insurance policy that will cost you more money per year, where you can have unlimited mileage from Memorial Day to Labor Day in the state of Michigan.
Oh, did you also notice?
Cost you so much money, too.
Let's see. This one paragraph in this is kind of interesting, and the last three words are interesting. This law stands as a testament to what can be done by grassroots classic car owners, as it was not a lobbying group or organization that made this happen, but rather one person who thought the way the law was written was too much and decided to do something about it. That person was John Russell of Traverse City, Michigan.
Huh. You know, isn't something located in Traverse City, Michigan?
I don't know much that's in Traverse City, Michigan. a lot of snow, and a one hell of a media company.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just you know, that's one of the things that popped into my head is, how is the insurance? And they're going to have to react fast because Memorial Day's right around the corner. That's like 45 days away. We need to get these updates out to our policy owner or policies. And these, you know, now all of a sudden you can drive the car 6 months out of the year. So effectively, we won't say double, but increase your insurance 50% because you can now use the car.
Exactly.
There was another. Oh, and I'm going to bring this. So we talked about Greg Stanley earlier, and I'm going to plug for Greg Stanley in the Collector Car Podcast. He has a sponsor, very limited sponsors on his show, but he stands by this company, and I'd like to get them on our show to talk to them a little bit. LLC TLC. You ever heard of this organization or company there, Derek?
No, that doesn't ring a bell, at least.
They're based out of Montana. And for as little as, depending on what you want to do, you can form an LLC in the state of Montana so that you can register your classic car there as a collector car, one-time fee. You don't have, Montana doesn't have sales tax, so you don't have to pay sales tax on the vehicle. And all you have to do is maintain this LLC in Michigan. I think it's as little as $200. You mean Montana? Maybe it's a $200 save. It can be up to a $200 savings on a $5,000 car. And now the guys that are doing this, I guarantee you, are not buying $5,000 cars. But would there all of a sudden be an industry in Michigan to all of a sudden, you know, hey, we've got a P.O. box for you up here, register your car up here, or register to this address, no matter where you live in the country, and get yourself a Michigan historic tag, because now you can drive it anywhere? Or does this Michigan law still only limit you to maybe using the car only in Michigan?
It's a great question, John. Well, which it does not say that in the law. So the answer would be no, because in the United States, each state recognizes the other states, you know, the interstate travel laws, that if your vehicle is plated in one state, that has to be recognized states as a registered vehicle. Now you have to abide by the, well, that'd be interesting because, you know, you have to abide by the, well,
well, California and Arizona are breaking down on cars that are registered in Montana being driven in their state, or, you know, they see it, they notice they're garaged all the time. They're showing up on the license plate readers time in Los Angeles, and those people are getting in trouble. But this is, you know, this is a different way of doing it, because you're going to, you know, you, instead of making this LLC and I now, you know, rent an apartment for $300 a month. No, I go out. I moved to Michigan. I bought an old hotel with 300 hotel rooms. I don't care if the thing's falling apart. I rent out these rooms, so you each have a suite address, and then you can register 15 vehicles to that suite address with suite, S-U-I-T-E, not S-W-E-E-T. And you now are registering all your collector vehicles more than 25 years old to this address to circumvent taxes, et cetera, because you can use it during the driving season in 80% of the United States.
Yeah.
Derek's thinking, I know this hotel 3 blocks from the old house. So here we are throwing out business ideas for you. Not necessarily illegal business ideas, but those who like to play in the gray area. And there used to be this called gray market cars. So could this be gray market registrations?
Ooh, Well, I mean, we can look at the example of some of the title things that used to happen as well in places, and some of those where
Alabama,
yeah, where, you know, somebody from out of state could, that needed a title, could have some, pay someone to get them a title state so that you could get that to your state to make it look like the car had been titled. And, you know, some of those games have been brought to an end over the last few years.
And some of them still exist. Reminds me, I need to call a friend of mine who's having a title issue on a car he has.
Yeah, I got to call a man about a horse.
For you, that could just be a single car. I mean, 1 horsepower.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was talking about. Yeah, I need to call a man about a quarter horse.
So 35 minutes of discussion on this topic. I don't know how much we want to beat it down. Like, even though I sound like Debbie Downer, I do like this law. I do like the change. I do like doors it may open. I think it slipped through. I'm really surprised it passed in the way it did. I would like to learn the whole story behind it, but I'm glad it exists. I hope we can use this as a model or the spark to light and have some of these collector car restrictions changed. But I do think this Michigan rule opens a lot of doors for people that have even more deceptive minds than I do.
Yes.
Now, I'm going to ask you a question that I heard on Greg Stanley's podcast. Greg's coming up a lot tonight, but this was in his
conversation, but here we are.
He was interviewing Jay Leno, and he asked Jay Leno if Jay had any 16-cylinder vehicles, and Leno admitted no, he didn't, and explained why he didn't. And did Marmon have a 16, or did he only have a 12?
No, they had the Marmon 16.
Okay, and Greg did ask Jay, and nobody really knew the answer. Why is it a Cadillac V16, but it's a Marmon 16, and you don't call it a Marmon V16?
Marketing, baby. Marketing.
No legalese, no trademarks, just... It does sound better.
Nothing that I recall. I think, you know, Cadillac and General Motors was big on highlighting the fact that it was a V block, right? Because early on they were kind of one of the early, along with Lincoln and a few others, yeah, but really designating the V, you know, in the V8, their V12s, their V16s, you know, I mean, Packard called it the Twin Six, you know, of a V12, they called it the Twin Six. Marketing. It was what sounds good off the tongue. What is, you know, the sexy like way to go? I don't think V16 is the sexy way to go. I think that's where General Motors kind of slipped up. But you take the mentality of Ned Jordan, who was one of the early geniuses of the automotive world, and of course the founder of Jordan Automobiles. But you try to portray something greater, or a storyline, or something that people can have a whimsical feeling about. And, oh, I bought a Cadillac V16. Oh, wow, very technical. But if you go out and say, oh, I just bought a Marmon 16. Well, what is that? Is it just the model? Is it engine? Is it what is that? I need to know more.
It saves that syllable. And it's amazing what that syllable does. Because as you're talking, I'm thinking, well, we have the inline eight or an eight, or we have the straight eight, or we have an inline six, or we have the slant six. You know, it's just a little, you know, granted the slant six, slant whatever, but, you know, a V4 sounds really interesting too. It makes a point, but I like the, you know, the, you know, twin six.
Yep.
I'm trying to think of, you know, VMB, you know, cylinder VWs or the. And Gotti, how the hell do you do a VW in a motor? I mean, like you said, I totally believe you. I was just wondering if there was a more technical reason, or I can totally believe it was just flat marketing.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just what sounds sexy, what's going to sell, you know, and also, well, you don't want to sound like Cadillac, right? You don't want to come out with another company like, oh yeah, Cadillac's got their Cadillac V16. Well, guess what? Marmon's coming out with a V16. Like it just, oh wow. You guys are just copying what somebody else is doing.
You know, like today is, it's a hybrid. It's got, you know, dual electric motors, or it's, you know, three motor sound good, you know, try dual motor, you know, gasoline to the rear, whatever. Everybody's got the same damn hybrids power plants. It's just somebody needs to come up with catchy names for this stuff. If you have any ideas, send it into the No Driving Gloves, and we will steal your idea and try to sell it to a manufacturer.
Let's see, which company would be right for it?
Tesla.
Probably Tesla. I think Elon, if you're listening, the Tesla Shocker.
I just got a real, and Elon would be the guy to do it. Elon's like
the Shocker guy, one, or
Elon's a boss I used to have, where you have to convince him he's the one that came up with it. But you can have the Shocker single motor, you can have the Shocker dual motor, or you could have the Shocker four motor, and all done with the finger insignias after it.
Oh man, we got to get that in front of Elon.
Or maybe behind Elon.
I mean, what did he already do with all his models? Come on.
That'd be the way to be sexy.
Exactly. If No Driving Gloves is not on the air next week, because we are in a major meeting in California or Texas at an electric vehicle manufacturer.
Hopefully not being a hand puppet. Please don't let your children watch the video.
yeah, exactly. Adult content.
Oh, is there anything else we want to touch on, Derek, or do we want to call it a night? And
no, I think that was a good show. And like I say, I mean, kudos to Michigan for stepping up and doing something great for the historic vehicle community. Michigan of all places, one doing it with its automotive history and the significance of that state in the auto world. So I'm proud of my home state yet again.
Sorry, I'm trying to check something, but this would be an actual conversation.
Yeah, John, you don't have to. I'll show you my birth certificate. I was born in Michigan and raised there. Okay. You can trust me on that one. Everything else I say, you probably want to check, but born and raised in Michigan. Yeah, that's true. So with all that being said, everybody, I'll wrap this up tonight. As we always tell you, if you're enjoying No Driving Gloves, if you like being part of the No Driving Gloves community, you can always scan that wonderful little QR code that you see on the video, buy us a coffee, give us some support. But the best way to support us and help the No Driving Gloves community grow is what I always say. Help us grow. Share the show. Thank you very much.
And with that, you know what to do. Derek and I both have our competing taglines, but I'm just going to say, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you later. Like you said, smash that like button.